So, as we saw, our Gemara on Samat Zayin the Beis talks about different unequal relationships in terms of Sukkah. The famous joke talks about the man who said that he has this plan, he has this ambitious plan where he's going to get all the rich people in the world to share their money with all the poor people in the world. So, after a few years, somebody says to him, whatever happened to that plan you had, is it working? So he says, I'm halfway there. The poor are willing to accept. So it's not always so fush. Sometimes the poor are not willing to accept, and sometimes the rich themselves want to take stuff with. So essentially, our Gemara talks about both in the middle. And the relevance here also is not simply that we're talking about staka sugyas, so here's some more staka things, but really from beginning to end, all of the staka sugyas on our daf are all really darshaning the pasuk of de machzoro. So essentially that's the idea of what exactly does it mean to have the chisaron, both l'kula and l'chumra. So we've seen how it defines things, l'chumra for the nosein, how you have to worry about that which is lacking, and we saw different elements of that. So now the Gemara is really focusing on another aspect of that. So for example, maybe chisaron by itself is enough reason to direct your attention. So let's say if you have someone who is an ani and is not asking for anything, it doesn't look like he's willing to accept staka straight out, that does not get you off the hook because it's the chisaron that's machayid rather than asking, which itself is interesting because we saw when we talked about the isurim that are relevant to staka, the isurim that come up for not giving staka, the two lavin, los sikbot and los na'ameis, that there was some debate as to whether they kick in only if somebody asks, if there's a tfiyah, or even if, like the Rambam seems to say, if you know they're aniyim. So it certainly sounds like from the sugya that you have at least a mitzvah saseh of staka, which may be questioned about when the los saseh, don't have to assume they're exactly parallel, but it certainly seems like there's some kind of chiyuv that starts even when you know somebody is in need, even if they don't ask, and even if they're essentially trying to run away from the whole accepting of staka. So certainly there's at least a mitzvah yumis, probably a mitzvah yugis. If not the actual lavin, there's certainly something along the staka spectrum that is relevant. So as we saw, the Gemara talks about two possibilities about how to deal with that. The Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, if you recall, saw this, say, Ein lo v'ein rotzel es barnes, nosn lo l'shum halva, v'chozrim nosn lo l'shum matana, divra meyer, v'chamram nosn lo l'shum matana, v'chozrim nosn lo l'shum halva, l'shum matana hava shakur, l'amarava, l'vtoach lo l'shum matana. So it sounds like there is a progression there. There are those who note that the Rambam doesn't really paskin like this exactly. Yochanan Kanievsky, for example, in his Aros on the Rambam, the Sefer Derech Hamun, I think we mentioned that Sefer, his Chidushim essentially on the Rambam in Zeroyim. It's a Mishneh Berurah style Sefer on the Rambam in Sefer Zeroyim. So in his comments over here, he and others note that the Rambam is not exactly poskening what the Gemara says in terms of there being a progression. That if you look at the language of the Rambam on today's list, I didn't put the Rambam more than the Uri because they've both been in previous lists, but it's worth paying attention to again, that the Rambam, when he records this, he essentially presents them as options, that you have to find some way to get this recipient to become a recipient, and he's not willing to take staka straight out, so you figure out what'll work. Either you'll give him a gift, or you'll give him a loan. Whichever it is, it sounds like essentially that there are equal options, and you do whatever you think is best. The Meiri paskins more explicitly like the Gemara. The Gemara, one could discuss exactly how this back and forth goes, but it sounds like ultimately that there's a progression, that you should try out other things first, so that you first should try matana, and then if that doesn't work, so then you go to halva, and if that doesn't work, you go to mashkom. That essentially, you don't want to open up with halva, as the Meiri emphasizes, that we're afraid that the individual is not going to want to get involved in a loan. He's going to be nervous about whether or not he can take on a loan. So if you start off with offering a loan, you could be worried that that's not going to get anywhere, and then they'll shut down the communication. So the progression is specific, that first you offer it as a gift. If he's not interested in accepting it as a gift, So then you realize that you need something that's going to give him a little bit more sense of responsibility. So then you offer it as a loan. And if he's still not willing to do that because maybe he doesn't believe that it really is going to be treated as a loan, because he's right on that point, because essentially, as all the poskim point out, that what comes next, you know, based on the Rishonim, but this is what we understand from the Gemara, that you don't really plan on collecting from the loan. If it turns out that he actually does find a way to get back on his feet, then he pays it back, and you know that he's able to pay it back comfortably. That's also something the Rishonim discussed, that if he pays it back when he can't afford to pay it back, then you shouldn't take it either. You shouldn't ask for it, and you shouldn't take it back when you can't afford to pay it back. But if he's able to pay it back, he pays it back fine, but you're not going to ask for it. And so he's correct in suspecting that this may not really be a totally above board loan. So if he needs more convincing, so then you take a mashkon. So there is a progression that way. It's fascinating, without going into all of this detail right now, but it's very fascinating that the mitzvah of halva, which is really a separate concept here, that there is a chesed in the Torah, it's the sixth parsha, Parshas Mishpatim, that there is a mitzvah to give loans to people who are in need. That is a chesed, which is similar to tzedakah, but somewhat different, because here you expect to get it back. So, not like our Gemara where you're faking the loan, but you actually do give a loan. So, when you give a loan, you expect to give it back. It sounds like from a number of Rishonim, again, I'll just touch on this briefly because it's not really our sugya here, but it sounds like there is a specific mitzvah to do it with a mashkon, which is a fascinating idea, because the mashkon, you would think, is something that is for the benefit of the lender. The lender is not confident that he's going to get the loan back, so he takes collateral to make sure that he will get it back. But it sounds like from a number of makaros that this is something he dafka should do. You might think if the lender doesn't need a mashkon, if he's confident without it, so then let him lend without a mashkon. But the idea that there's a specific kiyum mitzvah involved in using a mashkon is a fascinating idea. And the Rishonim and the Achronim have many different suggestions, but among them is that you give the borrower a greater sense of dignity. He really feels like he's being treated like a responsible party here. So maybe that's why there's a mitzvah to do it specifically that way. Other explanations, maybe it's worth it because it encourages the lender to do it in the first place. The lender might not want to do it, so anything that will make him more likely to do this is worthwhile. That's, again, very much a Shemitah year topic, Fuzbol. But whatever it is, there seems to be a specific value to lending with a mashkon. It's counterintuitive. You would have thought this is something just that the lender does for his own sake. But the idea that it helps somehow, so you find a little bit of an implication of that here also, that the ani who wasn't ready to accept the loan might be ready to accept the loan when you are taking a mashkon, which is really just the loan plus, but apparently that makes a difference.
I was
going to
ask, not
that
central to our sugya, but I think the Torah mentioned that we're doing all these workarounds in the church or whatever, we're doing also, like kavod for the ani. So is there a separate mitzvah here, or is it just...
Well, I think that's also an important question, which, and this we'll also get to tomorrow when we talk about the Bizarium part, that we said a few minutes ago that this daf is not really just about tzedakah. This is not every sugya of tzedakah in Shas. This is the tzedakah sugyas that essentially connect to interpreting the Bema Zoro. And we could make a case, you have to fetch it a little bit, but we could make a case that De Machzoro was specifically about the Halakhta B'drafa, about the personal Midah and the Nosing, and that many of these dinim are about that also. So the notion of specifically worrying about his covet at the same time is an idea which maybe is behind a lot of the dinim on this daf. So, you know, if you were to take, let's say, the top two sugyas in Shas, in the Bavli at least, about Staka, so it would be Ksuba Samach Zayin and Baba Basra Da Ches. And one could make a case that Baba Basra Da Ches, especially the context over there, it's all about communal responsibilities and about taking care of the needs of other people as part of the community. And that's more the Kupa issues. While this stuff is more about the individual donor and his kiyum hamitzvah. So we've seen that one could make a case, it's not mokrach, but one could make a case that many of the components of De Machzoro tie into that. and that this concern for the kavod of the recipient is also part and parcel of that, and is also connected with De Machzaro in a number of the passages that we've seen here. And again, certainly it's going to come up when we get into the Habanas Pnei Chaver Barav connection also.
Hi. So we talked about a little bit in last semester about lying for the sake of peace. Is this
next point?
Okay.
Okay, perfect segue. So let's discuss that for a second. I'll discuss that in one second. Just to mention also the Radbaz. Radbaz asks about, you know, what about the whole concern of Soni Matanos Yichya, that normally people may be adverse to getting Matanos in general. And he suggests that what's going on here is that the individual already maybe perceives the Matana as something which might expect some reciprocity. But it's a step beneath the loan. But it's more than staka, because staka you feel like you're just the recipient. Alone, on the other extreme, you feel like you have a responsibility to give it back. A matana, there isn't an actual stated chov. No one's going to take you to court saying, I gave you a gift and you never gave me a gift back. I took you out to lunch and you never took me out to lunch. No one's going to take you to court for that. But there is kind of an implicit reciprocal relationship. So maybe he feels, okay, right now he'll be the one receiving the gift. And hopefully next week he'll be in better shape and he'll give you a gift. So that's why it's perceived as being somewhere along the line between straight out staka and a halva. On the other hand, if you look at the Torah, so this is what Aryeh is addressing, the way the Torah phrases it, is that essentially you are going to pretend that this is a gift from someone else. Right, that since he doesn't want to accept staka, that's the whole problem, which the Gemara is kind of alluding to. He said, what are you talking about? Talking about matana, you already see that he doesn't want to accept matanas. So the Torah essentially answers that question, and some of the other Rishonim understand it like this as well, that you're going to straight out fool him. Right? Everyone agrees that there's some type of fooling him going on here. The other way is to say that, you know, you give the impression you expect to be paid back, and really you have no intention of getting it paid back. But it could be even more involved than that, that you could actually represent that this is coming from somewhere else, that this is a gift. Oh, some big fan of yours sent this in as an appreciation for all of your great work. Here is this gift that's being passed on to you. So that, this is now Arya, he's raising the question. Now, last semester, we spoke about the sugya of Mutar L'Shanos L'Fnei HaShalom. We spoke at some length about the whole mechanism there, the idea that you can sometimes fudge the truth for the sake of peace, for the sake of harmony. So how does this flow within that type of idea? So what it shows you is that how do you draw the line in terms of what kind of fudging is appropriate, what kind of fudging is not appropriate? In other words, what are the parameters of shalom? So, okay, we know from what we discussed last semester that if people are going to fight, so preventing that is considered to be justification for being mishana. So how broadly do we want to define shalom? Everything is about shalom. Is embarrassment about shalom? Is other types of considerations about shalom, things for a mitzvah purpose, is that considered to be shalom? So it seems like this is not necessarily about harmony. It could be broadly defined. But it seems more directly that it's not about fighting per se, but that the need to get him to accept staka for his own good is a justification for this fudging, we'll call it. I'm always afraid to call it lying because the Gemara doesn't say l'shaker, it says l'shanos, but we'll call it fudging. So it seems like this is within that rubric. And presumably, if we want to define it, or if we want to nail it a little bit more precisely, so it's a little tricky to say, well, any good motive is going to justify it because that could easily be abused. But it does seem to be, we spoke last semester about the lumbus, how exactly it works, but within this framework, it seems to be that if you view sheker as an avera ben odom l'chavero, that essentially you are hurting someone by deceiving them, especially, let's say, if you're defrauding them, that's an extreme. You're hurting them by deceiving them. So if you are benefiting that person, and we focus specifically on that, that if the person who you are telling this half-truth to is the beneficiary of that, so that seems to be justification, that the avera ben odom l'chavero goes away when it is letovas, specifically that person, you know, to exclude a situation where you're hurting him to benefit somebody else or yourself, that's normal lying, but if you're helping him, so then that seems to be within this rubric of something l'shanas v'fnei hashalom. Yeah?
can't that also be abused? Meaning,
absolutely, the whole thing can be abused. No question.
If everyone thinks that they're helping other people,
not everyone, but I agree with the first part of the sentence that yes, it can be abused.
Yeah.
I say everyone. I think we mentioned last semester the Sefer Chassidim, who put a limitation only things in the past, not things in the future. There clearly was a concern, and there should be a concern, that one could have too broad of a definition, and everything is between you and God as far as what you're abusing and what you're not. But just to try to figure out what the category is, it seems to be that if you want to call this Mamish Shalom, I mean, maybe, because you know, you could say the guy's going to end up fighting with you and you're going to get into a whole unpleasant situation when you're trying to push stuck on him that he's not accepting. But probably more directly, using the Hagdara that you find in some Svar, that if it's Latovaso, so it's not the Avera ben Adam Machavero of Sheker, and therefore this is an example of that. Now it's interesting to take it to a different level. I may have mentioned this last semester, I don't remember. There is a tshuva, the tshuva is Shevet HaKahasi. The Shevet HaKahasi is one of the Dayanim and Bells, or Shammai Kahas Gross. So the tshuva Shevet HaKahasi discusses, let's take this exact same scenario, but the one detail that will change is that in order to get the individual, you're in charge of a public fund in this case, and you're trying to get, let's say, a needy Talmud Chacham to accept from this fund, and you know that he's not going to do that. He doesn't see himself as somebody who should be taking from this fund. So you tell him that it's a gift from you. You say that you're a big fan of his Svarim, and therefore this money that you're giving him is a gift from you. So is that mutter? So what's different about that than what we just talked about a minute ago?
Maybe you serve enough price. We got back to that for the
Okay. I'm less worried about that. But what else is maybe different than what we described a minute ago? Are you?
Maybe there's some Gnevis Das here.
Oh, that seems to be the issue, right? The Gnevis Das seems to be a problem, because if you represent this as coming from you, and it didn't, it came from other donors who gave to the fund, and you're saying it came from you, so that runs a risk of Gnevis Das. This person is going to have gratitude to you that is unearned. He's going to think that this money was a donation from you, when really it wasn't. So that's normally what we talk about as the so-called Gnevis Das, that to get somebody's goodwill under false pretenses, that is generally the Isser. So that does change the landscape here. So is that also mutter to do? Is that also okay? So the Shuvah Shevet HaKahasi happens to assume that it is, because he says, what's the Isser Gnevis Das? The Isser is a subset of Sheker, and since we know that Sheker can be permitted, L'man HaShalom, so therefore Gnevis Das can be permitted as well. One could argue with this. One could take a different stance for a couple of reasons. First of all, you have to figure out what exactly is the nature of Gnevis Das. There are those who understand it more as an Isser of Gnevis, really, that you're taking something that's intangible, but it's valuable anyway, and that's the nature of the Isser. Some understand it that way, and you have to figure out if it would still follow rules of Sheker. And more pointedly, Rabbeinu Yonah for sure would disagree, because Rabbeinu Yonah in Shari Tshuva has a list of different categories of Sheker. He breaks down Sheker into 9 categories. He says sometimes you have a Sheker which doesn't hurt anyone, doesn't help anyone, doesn't do anything for you, doesn't hurt anyone else, totally neutral. Sometimes you have a Sheker that hurts someone else, sometimes you have a Sheker that doesn't hurt someone else but benefits you. He goes through a whole list of different types of Sheker, and he says the only kind of Sheker that is mutter b'nei HaShalom is if it's completely neutral, doesn't hurt anyone, doesn't help you at all, it just happens to be a false fact, so then it's permissible l'man HaShalom. So there he mentions Gnevis Das as a type of Sheker which is not mutter l'man HaShalom. So tweaking that detail, at least according to Rabbeinu Yonah, would seem to be an issue. So the Shevet HaKahasi took a different stance, but that's an interesting detail which may indeed make a difference. Okay, it was, I think, Aaron's the first one.
Well, I mean, according to Rashi, who says that the serving is asked the Hachzik Tova for yourself, so in this case it wouldn't apply because this is someone who doesn't want to get tzedakah, so when you give him the tzedakah, he doesn't want it in the first place.
In the Shevet HaKahasi's case?
Yeah.
Well, it does. That does run that risk. That's the problem. It does seem to fit that definition because he doesn't want staka. So instead, you're making him feel better by telling him it's a gift rather than staka. That's the part that's the good justification for it. But the downside is he's also going to be grateful to you. He's going to think, oh, you're such a nice guy, you appreciate my work, and really it doesn't come from you. So in the tourist case, he says it comes from some friend or relative, somebody else. Oh, this just came in, and now I'm just gift to you. So there's no real Gnevus Das element. But in this tshuva of the Shev Gagahasi, he's throwing in the Gnevus Das element. So is that also justified?
Well, and maybe also kind of the, like, if you're known, you know, the Gavi Tzedakah of the Sfan, so you know that you have to Gnevus Das, and like, you fool yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe...
Except here, you're saying it, so yeah.
What?
You know, there is an exclusion
of
Gnevus Das.
So it's only, right, you don't have to tell them.
Right, so the whole point is that you're, you know, he doesn't want to take it from the Sfan, so you're telling him that it was your appreciation for him, so that makes things more problematic. So there are a lot of interesting nekudas that emerge from this whole interaction. There is also a discussion in the Chashukei Chemed. The Chashukei Chemed, Bisper Zilberstein and his Ha'aros on the Daf over here. So he discusses, let's say you have a wife whose husband doesn't want to take tzedakah, and she feels that he's wrong. She feels that he needs tzedakah because she can't pay the bills in the household and she can't take care of the children. So she arranges to receive tzedakah without telling him. So is there anything wrong with giving tzedakah to the wife against the wishes and without the knowledge of the husband who's trying to live up to a certain standard of not taking any tzedakah, even if it means living a difficult life? So he assumes that for sure there's nothing wrong with this, that it's appropriate to give tzedakah directly to the wife to take care of the children and whatever else she needs to take care of without letting him know. He thinks if you do let him know, that's a problem, because then it's going to cause strife in the household. And he discusses, and interesting, while we're learning our ksubas, it says in the ksuba, the al yalimu zemizeh, they're not going to hide things from each other. So one might have thought, is that an issue? Should we worry if you're hiding things from each other? So he says he doesn't think that's a problem. He thinks that means you're hiding things that, again, to go back to the ben adam l'chaveru component, you're hiding things that the individual could benefit from. But to hide from them the knowledge that you're helping her out, that he'd rather not be helped out, doesn't think that that's a violation of this. And he notes also that, you know, one might be afraid that maybe you're depriving him of a schus, that he's looking for a certain schus to try to live without benefiting from tzedakah, and now you're going behind his back and giving him the tzedakah. So he's not worried about that either. He assumes that he still gets this list, that it's really all about the intent, and it's about his effort, and it's about his bitachon, and about all of those elements which he still maintains. And the fact that you're also providing his wife with sustenance, that does not compromise in any way the schus that he's trying to accomplish in this case. Okay, so what about the other side of the equation? So what about that question?
Yeah, in that case,
mm-hmm.
I feel like, isn't that like a little bit of a slippery slope? Meaning, if the husband, if he doesn't want to take him to Dhaka, and it really has become a problem, or since he can't support his family, eventually he'll have to find ways to make more money. Whereas if you keep on having your family supported,
you're saying you're an enabler.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting question. It's a question b'chlal in Hilchos Dhaka, how much to worry about being an enabler, you know, even without this more complicated case. So that's a judgment issue, which is a little bit relevant to the next sugya that we'll talk about, not so directly. It's a fair question in general about how much you have to worry about that. Together with other elements of this question, being also the question of going behind his back, and the question we were talking about a minute ago, about telling somebody something is a gift or when it's not really a gift. So all of these do involve complicated judgment calls, and we emphasize that semester when talking about Lashanas Pnei Hashalom, that important takeaway from that whole sugya is to know that the Gemara is not necessarily saying it's always a good idea. The Gemara is saying that, as far as I understand it, that if you were to know for other reasons and other assessments that it's a good idea to follow this approach, do you have to worry that there's an isser of sheker? So the Gemara says no, but if shalom is really going to be preserved, so then there's no isser sheker under those circumstances. But I don't think one should interpret that as endorsement always, that it's always a good idea. And so too with a lot of these cases. So the situation of fooling somebody in terms of what you're giving them, situation of going behind the husband's back, situation of enabling somebody when maybe there are other options for them. All of those are judgment calls, and all of them require an independent type of assessment to know, okay, what is the best mahalach here? So within that, I think here, the halacha is telling you what's legitimate within your judgment calls. But also, maybe take it a one step further, and this is true about the Lashana Sugi also, that it's not making the decision for you what is best, but it is calling your attention to certain realities. So too, let's say, for example, in Lashana Sneha Shalom Sugi, so the Gemara is telling you that it's mutter to do this if you know that it's a good idea. I don't think it's telling you that it's necessarily a good idea, but it is calling your attention to the fact that it might be a good idea. That one might never think about this. One might think, okay, honesty is the only path to go, and I should be brutally honest. So the Gemara is telling you two fiducia. That one, consider the possibility that you don't always have to disclose everything. And if that is the right possibility, then you're free to pursue it without any halachic objections. Now, in a chanami, it might still be a bad idea for whatever reason, so you still have to assess that. So too, I think in these sugyas, you have the same kind of framework, that it may be a bad idea to do a number of these things, but if you are sure that it is helpful for the person, so the halacha certainly has no objection, all the more so it tells you it's the right thing to do, and the very sugya calls your attention to it, calls your attention to the fact that maybe you may have to be creative if somebody is not willing to accept staka, that there is the option of creativity, it might be a good option. So I think that's really the structure of both sugyas. Lashana Sneha Shalom last semester, and this sugya here, calling your attention to what might be recommended, what might be necessary, and then telling you that it's certainly a valid halachic option once you have assessed that it makes sense and that it's not counterindicated by other factors. Okay. So what about somebody who is an usher and doesn't want to support himself? So to what extent do you have an obligation to support him? So here, like we said, you have again a continuing interpretation of machzoro, and that's what some of the Rishonim call attention to here. So it's interesting, you have to read the Tosfos carefully, the Tosfos that I added today, Tosfos and Bav Metzia, as well as the Ritva on the daf. I have an interesting comment, which is really more about hermeneutics than it is about staka, but it tells you about staka along the way, that the Gemara is telling you whether you darshan kefa lashon in the pasuk, do we have to assume the pasuk means something or not? So since the Gemara gives two options, right, if you call us, look at the Gemara again, right, so yesh lo v'eino rotzo l'sparnes, ein d'skakin lo, so and then the Gemara goes on, skip to the end here, interpreting the pasuk that in terms of Tavitenu, so what do I do with the pasuk? Elamani mekayim Tavitenu, dibra Torah kolashu b'nei adam. So basically, the Gemara has a machlokas about what should you do about such an individual. An individual who has money, but isn't taking care of himself. So now the question is, should staka be involved? So essentially, it's a machlokas in the Gemara. Do you say that, well, then you should interpret the extra words in the pasuk to say you should loan to him also, but in this case, you make him pay back, and then you can't make him pay back right away, because then it's not going to work, and you'll have to wait till after he dies and take it back from his yashim, but that's how you do it? Or do we say, no, you just forget about him, you don't deal with such a person, and then the rest of the pasuk is not relevant. So the Gemara says, well, what's the machlokas then? It sounds like the machlokas is whether we put significance on a double lashon or not. Do we say that, okay, we have this double language, so it's there for a drasha, or do we say that Dibur Torah b'lashon b'nei adam, it's just a poetic way of speaking that human beings might use, the Torah uses it also. So the Rishonim, more explicitly Ritva over here in Tosfos and Bava Metzia, discuss that whole back and forth, and they suggest that a part of the push here is that there is reason to believe that the pasuk is not talking about this person. That it is hard to understand the pasuk is saying you have to worry in the context of staka about an ashir she'eino rotzel his parents. Why? Because de'machsara. The whole point is that he has a chisaron, and here this person doesn't have a chisaron. He has. He's choosing not to use it to his own benefit. But maybe that does not create any chiyuv on you from this pasuk, because the pasuk is specifically directed towards the presence of a chisaron. So that theme, again, all of these dinim in this daf were all about telling us what we can learn specifically from the pasuk of Deimach Soro. So this is another point. This is not just the other half of the inverse of what do you do about a needy person who won't take. Well, I have an example. What about a non-needy person who wants to take? No, it's specifically, this is also a chiddush from that pasuk, that the pasuk says the chiyuv is for somebody who has a chisaron, and this individual does not have a chisaron. So if that's the case, so ain't this kapilo, and that seems to be how we paskin. We paskin that we don't have to do this fancy trick of lending him money and then waiting until he dies in order to get it back, but he is not included in the obligation of staka at all. Now, if you saw the Ran, the very short Ran, which I added this morning, but somewhat shocking, Ran, right? What does the Ran say? Right, now what? Right, that apparently says, okay, so we don't really care what happens to him, that if he's going to be so miserly that he's not going to survive, he's going to die, alright, you know, what can you do? So that's a shocking statement, so it's an appropriate cliffhanger since we're just about out of time.
That's pretty much the implication of the Gemara, like, so, the Gemara says don't deal with it, like, that's what's going to happen.
Okay, so that's a fair question. So is that essentially what the Ran is doing? He's basically reading it straight out. So sorry?
I think that the Gemara is just saying that it's going to give him tzedakah, but it never gets to the point where the guy's like lying on the floor, like unconscious. Like,
so you could have said that without the Ran.
And then the Ran seems to contradict it. He says,
no, right. Well, they contradict it, but the Gemara is not clear one way or another. You could have thought that, and then the Ran takes it to a different level. So does the Ran mean that or not? So unfortunately, we're out of time. Sorry for the late start. Just to quickly review what we spoke about, and we'll continue from this tomorrow and go to the Habanas Bin Chaviv Rab Sugis. So we spoke about the Gemara's whole progression about what to do about somebody who won't accept. Try as a matana, try as a halva, and try as a mashkon. So we talked about a difference between the Rambam and the Meiri. The Meiri is really closer to the Gemara, but talks about it being a progression because you'll scare him off if you start talking about a loan right away. So it's only if necessary, while the Rambam basically sounds like you do whatever works, whatever you think makes more sense. They're all equal options. And we talked about the difference between using a mashkon and not, how we find that in the context of halva, this week's parsha, that mashkon is considered to be a value, and how here also it seems like it makes it more palatable, even though essentially it's just a loan. So what's the difference between a loan with a mashkon and without a mashkon? So you see, apparently it gives the individual more dignity and makes it more possible. In terms of matana, the Rabbaz writes that the matana here is something also somewhat more reciprocal, and that's why maybe it's better than stam staka. But the tour essentially suggests that the matana is presented from someone else. So we talked about the shanas of the hashalom, how the hadara for shalom for our purposes of this din could be anything that is latovas, the listener, and you have to figure out how not to abuse that. And then we talked about what about if you want to say that it's from you, which is going to invoke a problem of Gnei Vistas. That was the discussion in Shuvah's Shevet Akahasi. Should we say that that creates an additional problem, and should that be mutter or not? He allows it. Rabbeinu Yonah, one might argue, would not allow it because he doesn't see that Gnei Vistas is justified by Shalom. And then we talked a little bit about how this whole sugya seems to suggest that even without a tefiya, that there certainly is at least a chiyuv staka, if not the isurim that are relevant when you refuse staka. And then we talked about the chetshut yechemed, about what happens if a wife wants to accept staka and her husband doesn't, and he says it's okay, it's not a violation of the alimuzimuzu, it's not a violation of compromising the swiss that he's trying to get, but you should also just not let him find out and cause machlokes. And then we said, in general, all of these sugyas seem to be within a framework of telling you what might be a good idea, calling your attention to it, telling you that if it is a good idea, then the halacha certainly supports it, but there's also room to say that in some situations it may not be a good idea. And then, you know, we started to talk about an usher who wants to take, he doesn't want to support himself, so it's a machlokes in the Gemara what to do. Should you do this fancy shtick with pretending to lend it to him, with lending it to him and then taking it back after he dies? Or should you just forget about him. So it seems to be the halacha follows the idea of forgetting about him. And the way the Rishonim, not so clearly, but you're even careful, explained the Ritva and the Tosfos and Bav Metzia, that that's also a drasha on this pasuk, that you have to have a chisaron. So if he's rich, he doesn't have a chisaron, he's not subject to all the obligations in that pasuk. And the Ran goes so far as to say, even if he's going to die, so we'll have to pick up tomorrow with how literal is that meant to be taken. All right, everyone should have a wonderful day. It seems like the snow room did not really hit us. And may continue.